Today we hear Matthew's version of part of the gospel that we heard yesterday. This business about the demands of following Jesus, the cost of discipleship. Before we get to that, though, I think it's good to mention today's saint, Saint Cyril of Alexandria, who helps us also understand the role of our Blessed Mother as Mother of God. Today is also, here in the Philippines, celebrated as the feast of our Mother of Perpetual Help. So perhaps that would be another reason why we should bring a Marian perspective into our pondering today. Mother of Perpetual Help, Mother of God. Cyril of Alexandria, he's one of these great doctors of the church that arose in the 4th, 5th century. He was a contemporary of St. Augustine. St. Augustine was about 20 years older. But both of them are from northern Africa. Cyril is from Egypt. Augustine was from, I think, what's now Tunisia or Libya. Anyway, Cyril is best known for his role at the Council of Ephesus, which defended the truth against the error of Nestorius. And Nestorius's error was that you can't call Mary Mother of God because God doesn't come from her. So you just call her Mother of Christ. That was Nestorius's position. And Cyril of Alexandria, he's a pretty feisty guy, and he maybe did it in a very offensive way, but he ultimately it was the victor and defended the truth that you can call Mary Mother of God because of the identity of her son. So the whole issue there was not really so much about Mary as much as about who is Jesus. If he is God, and he is, well then Mary is Mother of God, because certainly Mary is the mother of Jesus. So this period of church history, Council of Ephesus, at the work of St. Cyril and others, was discovering and defending the full truth of who Jesus is. He is God and man. He is 100% God, eternal God with no beginning, and he's 100% man born of the Virgin Mary. He's both what the theologians call the hypostatic union, two natures, one person, one divine person. Okay, so this is who Jesus is. He is God, he's man, he's journeying around, and he's gathering disciples. Now, in yesterday's gospel, Sunday, 13th Sunday, we had a longer passage from St. Luke. There was that beginning, at the beginning of that passage yesterday, was Jesus resolutely determining to pursue his way to Jerusalem. It was a presentation of Jesus as a committed savior. He's going to go to Jerusalem. Nothing's going to stop him. And so when the Samaritans reject the apostles and the apostles want to call down fire from heaven, Jesus says, just forget about that. We've got to go to Jerusalem. I'm not here for retaliation. I'm here for salvation. Okay, so that was part of yesterday. That's not part of today's gospel. In fact, in today's gospel, even though it's certainly referring to the same encounters with some potential disciples, in yesterday's gospel, they were near Samaria. Here, they're on the shore of the lake, or the Sea of Galilee, because it starts out here. We're going to cross over to the other shore because of the crowds. So the setting is different. It doesn't mean the teaching is different. Luke is emphasizing the importance of Jerusalem. Matthew here, he has Jesus up in Galilee, and he is on the move, and he's not doing what the crowd demands. He's doing the will of the Father. Anyway, in yesterday's gospel, there were three people. There was the one who said he would follow Jesus wherever you go, that he's also quoted in this gospel. Yesterday there was also the one who wants to bury his father. He's in today's gospel too. And then there was the third one who wanted to say goodbye to his family, and Jesus told him, well, don't set your hand to the plow and keep looking back. So that's not part of today's gospel. So Matthew has a shorter version. There's only two disciples that he counsels today. Well, let's reflect a little bit on what he says. The first man says, teacher, I will follow you wherever you go. In this context, it seems to imply that he's willing to cross over to the other shore, because that's what Jesus said they're going to do. So that's a pretty narrow understanding of where Jesus is going. He's not just going to the other shore of the Sea of Galilee. He's going to the other shore of eternal life. He's going beyond this world. And so he tells the man, foxes have dens and birds of the sky have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to rest his head. He's not really talking about foxes and birds. He's talking about himself in comparison with creatures of this world. He's telling the man, you're not going to find security in this world as my follower, because I'm not rooted in this world. My mission goes beyond this world. So if you're following me because you want security, or you want popularity, or you want power, or you want something earthly, you're going to be disappointed. Still, it's not a bad idea to reflect a little bit on why Jesus picks out these two animals. Foxes are specific animals. Now, I don't know what the translation is from Greek. And then birds are a kind of a whole category of animals, not just one kind of bird. Jesus doesn't talk much about foxes. The only other reference to foxes is when he speaks about Herod, King Herod. Herod, the Pharisees warned Jesus that Herod was out to get him, and Jesus' response was, you tell that fox, I'm on my way to Jerusalem. Tell that fox. You know, foxes have a reputation for being clever. Even in the classical world, the Greek fables, and foxes are clever, they're sly, they're devious. And they have dens, they burrow under the ground, they belong to this world, and they operate in a worldly way. Birds, Jesus does talk about birds a lot more often, but not necessarily in the most glowing of terms. He just says that God takes care of the birds and you're worth more than a whole flock of sparrows. So birds are admired because they can fly. They seem to be free. They live in the sky. They go where they want. But Jesus does not praise birds that much. In fact, in the parable of the seeds, birds are representatives of the evil one. They pick the seeds off the footpath. That's what the devil does. He takes the word out of our hearts. So anyway, foxes underground, birds in the sky, they belong to the realm of creation, and the Son of Man does not. Now, remember, going back to what Cyril of Alexandria defended, insofar as Jesus is God, he doesn't belong to this world. God can't be contained by his creation. But insofar as he's man, he has a human nature and he has to rest. He says he has nowhere to rest his head. Well, then he'll lie down any old place. In the open field, there's a only passage I can think of where he sleeps is when he sleeps on the boat. Remember during the storm, he falls asleep and the apostles are all panicking. And it seems that there he deliberately slept in order to teach them not to be afraid. But yes, he sleeps. That's part of being human. He doesn't seem to sleep very much. He stays up all night praying, but he sleeps because that's part of what it means to be human. The point, though, is not that he has no place to sleep, but that he doesn't belong to any place here. His home is not in this world. And that's what he's saying. If you're going to be my follower, You have to accept this reality. We're not building an earthly kingdom here. We're not seeking earthly security. We have no place to rest our heads. In fact, our hearts are restless until they rest in God. St. Augustine again. So this is an instruction to us who are disciples. We can say we will follow Jesus wherever he goes, but when he goes somewhere we don't like, where we are uncomfortable, outside our comfort zone, or where he's making demands on us that go against our flesh, will we still follow him? That's the challenge he's putting before us. I will follow you wherever you go. Yes, your will be done. It's the right statement, but we have to mean what we say. The other one says, let me go first and bury my father. Now, it's right to bury the dead. The Jews held the responsibility of burial very highly. It was a sacred duty. So Jesus is not against burying the dead. Of course he's not. He would expect his followers to bury their dead loved ones. But he says to this man, follow me and let the dead bury their dead. It's a shocker. It's so disturbing. It's like he's saying, you just let people, because the dead can't do anything, so they obviously can't bury anyone. So it sounds on the literal level like he's saying, just abandon dead people and do something else. I mean, he can't mean that. He can't mean that because you don't even have to be a good Jew. Just a normal human being, you don't treat the dead with that much disrespect. So he doesn't mean that. And because of this context, the commentators always say, the problem with this disciple is that his father is not dead. He's not saying, my father's dead and I'm going to bury him. He's saying, let me wait around until my father dies. Let me put my relationship with my father and my sacred duty to bury him ahead of your call. And that's where the problem lies. Nothing is more important than the will of God. Nothing, including sacred duty of caring for our loved ones. Nothing is more important than doing the will of God. Now, it's part of the will of God that we care for our loved ones. So there's no conflict there. But if there is a conflict, the will of God takes the priority. That's an apparent conflict, I should say, because in God there's no conflict. Let the dead bury the dead. Well, what does that mean then? He can't be talking about physical death, because physically dead people don't do anything. They don't bury anyone. He must be talking about the spiritually dead. He must be saying, and I'm just interpreting this as best we can, let those who have no spiritual life, let those who are preoccupied with this world and who are not my followers, let them worry about the things that are dead-end projects. Let the spiritually dead get attached to their will, which is basically an attachment to death. Let other people, don't join the group of the spiritually dead. Follow me. So this is again a renewal of the call to be his disciples. Don't choose human nature and reject the divine nature. This is back to what we learned from Saint Cyril. Jesus is God and man. Among the errors that have crept in throughout history, there are those who emphasize Jesus' humanity and neglect his divinity. They're more materialists. They're focused on things of this world. They're preoccupied with what is not ultimately important. The other extreme is those who emphasize Jesus' divinity and neglect his humanity. They live as if things of this world don't matter. That's not Jesus' teaching either. Jesus says, you do the will of God here in this world. And that's what he's calling his disciples to do. That's what he's calling us to do. We have the advantage that of course, 2,000 years of sacred tradition, and we have the advantage of the saints who show us what this is all about. Teach us who Jesus is, God and man, who teach us who Mary is, Mother of God, who teach us how to abandon our will to the will of God. But the call is the same from what Jesus says here and what Jesus says throughout the centuries. The first priority has to be the will of God. That's what it means to be a disciple.